Hello, this is Lex, and welcome to the Next Step Remote podcast, where I have the pleasure to interview some of the best remote work experts from all over the world. In each episode, we cover a topic, success story, or challenge to help you make remote work work. Enjoy. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending where in the world are you today. So I would like to welcome Radina Nedialkova to the show today, who runs her own remote advisory talent and training company called Vox Advisory. Welcome, first of all. I know a fair bit about you because we've connected previously, so I had good conversations. Can you do a bit of an intro for people who might not have heard of you before?
Sure, Lek, and thank you so much for inviting me to your show. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you today. Yes, as you can tell by my awkward name, I'm from Eastern Europe, but I reside in Ireland for the past 7 years, and my background is actually a nice mix of psychology, human resources, and recruitment, or also known as talent acquisition. I've actually made a bit of a jump last year in the entrepreneurship, and as you said, I did found my own organization, Vox Advisory, and despite the common thought that I am still a recruiter, I don't do anything related to recruitment. I'm actually focusing on consulting and particularly working with different startups on creating their talent strategy, making sure that they feel comfortable with the different processes. We are not going to create a whole hierarchy, but at least we need to create some processes. We need to make sure that each and every team member is fully equipped with the right knowledge. They know how to interview, they know how to assess, and they know how to do their sourcing, screening, everything. So a lot of these startups, they don't want to, or they don't really need a full-time HR person. So I try to provide kind of an all-rounded service for them. And then on top of that, after spending 4 years working at LinkedIn, I do feel that I am a bit of a LinkedIn coach without the formal classification of being a coach. So I do support individuals and organizations in terms of boosting their LinkedIn presence. So I guess I'm a...
You know what? I can fully relate to that. I'm a generalist by nature. And I actually realized yesterday when somebody asks me what I do for work, my answer from now onwards will be what day of the week? Because on a Wednesday, I'm recording a podcast. On a Thursday, I'm a project manager. On a Monday, I'm doing product management and so forth. And I think that's probably the best answer for the time being, at least, that I can give. So I can fully relate to your background. But I also know how frustrating it can be if we get pigeonholed into one area. As you said, with you, for recruitment, that was the case, that you kind of got dropped into it. So in the way that you work, from what I understand, you basically work with organizations to help them with whatever they might need, but not necessarily have realized that function, that obviously they need HR support. But it's a very broad topic, as we know. And once you start working with them, you identify what is actually the key thing that they need to focus on rather than going with an existing solution. Is that right?
Precisely, yes, because a lot of the times they do need a bit of navigation. So we create together the strategy to suit their culture, to suit their needs, their people. Obviously, each and every organization has its own culture and goals, and they should be aligned, absolutely. But a lot of the times they don't know, or they're not necessarily sure what is the right approach. And in the end of the day, there's so many startups coming up every single day, and people have choices. So how can you become an employer of choice? This is exactly my goal. On one side, to make sure that they're doing the right thing, but also on the candidates front, to provide them with all of the, you know, preparation tips behind the scenes, so that they see the recruitment process not as another exhausting, nerve-wracking process, but to see it as an opportunity to learn something new and become better as professionals and individuals.
Yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. And culture is such a broad topic. And for me, that underpins a lot of what an organization wants to do. Because obviously, we can say every organization's got a culture, no doubt it, whether it's good or bad. A lot of organizations obviously have cultures that they are not aware of how to control and how to develop. So I've started to use the term of positive company culture, where we kind of achieve what they want to achieve. Because true success of an organization, in my book, lies in how people work and how people interact and similar values and things like that. It's yes, spreadsheets, timelines, budgets, tools, everything else are important, but it's how we use them that I find far more important than that. And this kind of brings us on to a conversation. You know, the idea behind the podcast is to have this unscripted as much as possible, although I do always have a few questions. But we'll put the non-scripted thing to a proper test today. So I know a fair bit about company culture and employer DNA because it's something that I'm very interested in, but I'm definitely not an expert as you are. So it's great to have you on the show to talk about it and not to put pressure on you. How would you kind of describe it? What is culture? What makes it up? What is the employer DNA? Let's kind of run with that.
Mm-hmm. And I thank you so much for bringing this topic, because in the end of the day, I feel there is a big confusion around what culture is. A lot of companies have been using the term culture fit, and it kind of became something negative. And even if you put it in a positive context, people who have not had the chance to get the proper explanation of that use it with the wrong meaning, or it has a negative connotation in the mind of candidates. And I've seen that, I felt it, and I'm really trying to push companies to think beyond culture fit, because this is one small part of the puzzle. You mentioned tools, you mentioned the behaviors, the values. I also spoke about the fact that you need to align your culture to your business goals. So if you are a startup owner, and if you decide to become a remote first company and start hiring people, so obviously you look after your finances, you get investments, you look after the product, so you hire an engineer, you hire a designer. So you're a team of three now. The culture itself is basically your USP, your unique selling point. If you have hired these two people to support you, what do you three believe in? What is the goal? What is the problem that you're trying to solve? So all of the startups and every single company has had to do a pitch deck or even a demo or to participate in ideation when it comes to their product. It's exactly the same with the culture. And I don't understand why this is not streamlined yet as part of the product that you're creating. Let's say, to give an example, you are a watchmaking company in Switzerland, very traditional example. Obviously, your product is very refined when it comes to the design, when it comes to the tools that are used. It's high quality, super detail oriented. So obviously, you are looking to hire people that embody similar kind of mindset, right? They're detail oriented. They have an eye for the design, for the product itself. They understand what high end product is, right? So you're looking not only for this experience, but this mindset. So to make a comparison back to the culture and the unique selling point, it is a compilation of, okay, what is my company standing for? What does it stand for? What are the behaviors that I feel would bring success to us, not on individual level? So not I like you. This is not a culture fit. This is likability, and it's subjective. When it comes to the culture fit, it can be rather objective. If you describe it based on, okay, my product is, let's say, in the fintech industry, so I'm solving a problem for customers who are not able to pay quickly enough. What kind of behaviors do I need so that I can facilitate achieving the mission of my company? Okay, so it's much broader than that. It's the behaviors, it's your values, it's the tools that I have, and how do I also act? I've seen a lot of companies are putting integrity and being open and honest as their values. They put it because it's nice to have and it's a good PR, but they don't really believe in that, or they don't really follow up, right?
Absolutely. So could not agree more with that.
It's one thing to tick the box, to tick the box, and it's completely another thing to live and breathe with that. And I know I'm subjective when it comes to LinkedIn, for example, but this is an organization that is really embedding this as part of the DNA. That's why I like more the concept of company DNA versus a company culture. When it comes to the remote space, this is valid x50. Okay, everything that I said here, when it comes to the compilation of factors, if you're in a fully remote space, it's x50. Why? Because you can't build this same cohesion, this same dynamic that you can build when you're in the same physical entity. And this is basic human interaction. Now, it's not something that I came up with or a scientist came up with. It's from the dawn of times, people are social creatures, right? And when you see your colleagues only in a box, which is usually Zoom or any other tool, it doesn't bring the same connection, right? So if I think about good practices and how I would encourage companies that are fully remote to embrace their culture is A, first and foremost, sit together in one virtual meeting. Discuss what is your USP? What's your unique selling point? Why should people join you? And it's not, oh, we have amazing product. We provide impact. Every company can say that nowadays. Every company. What is the different piece that you can bring to someone else's life? So it's these kind of exercises when I try to push them out of their comfort zone and I try to get to the real core of, okay, why we do what we do, okay? And I'm going to quote one very, very famous and very successful person, Simon Sinek, because he does talk about the why more than anything else. It's not the what, it's not the how, you can figure that out. The why is what will bring you success, in my opinion.
I think it's a fantastic opinion and one that I could not agree more with if I tried, and trust me, I'm trying. You mentioned so many things that I actually don't know where to connect with, because first of all, values and mission. I've been in so many organizations where I was sitting in a room and you see all these fantastic posters on the wall about the values. I'm going, wow, this sounds so amazing. And then you ask them, the people that you're talking with, about the values, and they're kind of perplexed. They don't know. So that just means there's a poster on the wall that somebody put up last year and that's where it stayed. And you just go, oh my God. The other element, I think you've mentioned it, and the way you've talked about it, it's something that I've never heard of before. You said company culture and a company DNA. I like that distinction between the two. What is the DNA then? Is it the values? Is it everything else that you've mentioned? Because that, for me, that's part, I've always referred to it as company culture. That's what creates company culture. What does company DNA include that a company culture doesn't?
Yeah, and I think that's a solid question. Sorry for the long-winded answer, but I get really passionate, similar to you, about that and seeing like stuff on the wall that are actually not really embodied. Now, if I have to make a diversification between the two terms, the culture, usually people connected with people. So the culture is something that is brought usually by other humans, versus the DNA, which is literally the core of every single mechanism. Every single thing is based on their DNA. So again, I'm going back to my previous metaphor, the watch company. If you think about how complex a watch is when you open it, so many different, absolutely minimal tools that are making that whole machine tick. The DNA is that. The DNA is the baseline. Without it, nothing can truly exist. That's why the DNA is much broader than the culture itself, because the DNA will include, as you pointed yourself, the values, the mission, the type of business, the type of industry that you're in, and also the humans. So it consists of various resources around you. Some are internal, others are external. But it basically is what makes your company tick.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. I think it clarifies it quite nicely. And as you were talking, that reminded me of a book that I've had. It's been sitting on my shelf for probably a couple of years. And I've recently started reading it again because I've kind of done it bit by bit. And it's called An Everyone Culture. And it looks at three organizations from different industries. I think, if I remember, one is a company called Next Jump. and they are an e-commerce organization, so tech. Another one is Bridgewater Investments, which is a financial investment institution, and very successful, by the way. And the third one is called Decarion, I think. It's an American organization, a group that owns cinemas in the US. And it looks, dissects these three organizations from a point of view of creating what they call a DDO, a deliberately development organization or developmental organization. So they have got rules and they've got different approaches, but the aim is always the same. We invest in our people. And it's a fascinating read because you look at these companies and go, so how is this possible? How they can do that? But then it also gives you all the details of what they do and how they operate. Definitely recommend that book for anyone who's interested in the topic. And if you're not interested in the topic, I think you should read it even more because that's a great introduction with great examples and great details. And you can fish out what might work for you. So I'll be including that in the show notes for sure. The way I came across it was Simon Sinek was promoting it. So he's got, I'll find it's one of my favorite clips on YouTube of Simon Sinek, 7 minutes long, where he goes on pretty much a rant of what everything that is wrong with the way that we build organizations at the moment. And it starts off with a very kind of gentle conversation, and then he goes on to this rant, and you could really feel the energy and the passion in his voice when he's talking about it, because he's just basically on the verge of swearing a couple of times, and you can tell how much he feels about it. Again, Radina, I'll send you the link later on, but I'll include in the show notes. 7 minutes if you want to know anything about the book and get interested in Simon Sinek, that is the video to watch. There was, and kind of as part of it, so how big of an element is the kind of hiring? Because you hear a lot of the time that people hire based on cultural fit, but then I've got a bit of a mixed feeling about that. How good is just enough to be a cultural fit within an organization? Because obviously skill and experience is something you can teach, but that is important as well. And it depends on the organizational strategy of, do you want somebody to nurture or do you need somebody to hit the ground running? So I'm always a bit torn, and I know that a lot of people are torn as well, where you shouldn't hire just on fit, on cultural fit, because it can come and bite you in the bum later on. What would you say to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And no doubt hiring is always a complex thing, because it's not just one size fits all. You can't say I'm hiring based on culture fit and that's it. That means that you are incredibly subjective, that nothing else matters, but something that you have created out of blue. Basically, that for me is borderline a sect, because the whole element of belonging is, and belonging and inclusion is, we perceive you as different to us, but you bring something that is also appreciated from all of us. So if I think about culture fit, again, I'm really trying, whenever I hear a client talking about culture fit, I'm really trying to eliminate that word. First and foremost, that's my goal. The second thing that I do is I challenge them on their self-awareness. I challenge them exactly on that. Do you know what culture fit is? And can you describe to me your culture fit? And what usually happens, they actually start talking about their team. They start talking about the people dynamics and the cohesion and who is what kind of character. That's team fit. That's completely different ballgame. Every single manager is facing this challenge to understand who is a good fit for the role that they're hiring for, but also for the team. The culture fit is the third element, okay? So I always encourage people to think it from three angles, okay? One is this person good for this role here and now, and would they be happy in a year time? Because no one wants to hire someone for a couple of months in most of the cases, if we're looking at full-time roles. Particularly in the remote space, you want people who would have some continuity with your brand, with your organization. So that's numero uno. Number two, if this person is different, which is 100% of the case, than my team, what more they can bring so that they make my team even better? Because we all know what happens if we copy-paste the same people over and over. There is no diversity of thought, no diversity of action, nothing. People just seem to do the same stuff. And Albert Einstein has said it. If you do stuff the same way over and over, don't expect a different result, right? So the second thing is really focused on embrace the fact that they're different. Yes, it might not resonate with you, but that's not the goal of the exercise when you're hiring. You can't resonate with everyone. We vibe on different frequencies. And then the third piece is this person having the skills or the qualities when it comes to what has worked well in our organization, or what do we believe great looks like, or some skills that are usually replicated by MVPs, by the most valuable players. So skills, general skills like coachability. Is this person open to learn? Are they flexible? So flexibility, adaptability, agile thinking. Are they able to build connection? So do they want to stay on their own and not be bothered by any other humans, which is probably not the best case, or do they build personal connection? So these are more general skills that you should be aware of. That's why I'm putting them on a completely different bracket. So in terms of the culture fit, I always say to my clients, first of all, realize what your culture is, and then hold that against someone else externally. Because if you start thinking about it, this is so wrong, so wrong. You don't even know what your culture is. So how do you expect someone else to fit that in that box that you have in mind? And if they don't fit, do they bring something else, something different, something that might be better? Okay, so I've seen that actually a lot of the remote companies are much more open to explore potential versus fit, which is great, because people are indeed different and have very different experience. So we can't tick all of the boxes in terms of this is a great match for both my company, for my team, and for my organization. That's a purple unicorn is how we call it in the recruitment world.
I like that term, purple unicorn. I think you're very much spot on in that. There are so many elements, and as you were talking, I was thinking about the role of a leader or CEO or whoever it might be within all of that, and how much it stems from them setting the rhythm, the beat, to how the organization operates. And a culture starts with that. Everybody contributes to culture. We all form it, and we're all part of it, and we create it and make it what it is or what we want it to be. But it often needs somebody at the start, especially at the start, to say, this is what we're going to do. Lead by example and all the monikers that we could use in this situation. But yeah, I think a lot of organizations, you're right, get it wrong, because when you ask them a question, what's your culture, they can't describe it. It's like having a sales process and wanting to get somebody to start selling your product on your behalf when you actually can't sell it yourself in the first place. That's what I would equate it. And especially with remote, at the moment when we've had all these organizations moving from offices to working from home, let's be honest, because that's what it's been for the past few months, and how they've moved, just done a copy and paste, thinking everything's going to continue. And I think more and more we'll start seeing the results of that approach. It was initially understandable that approach was taken because we didn't have time to prepare. But now we need to realize what's working, what's not working, and how we adapt, or even going back to offices. Because let's think about how this is all going to change. We're not going to go back to the same office, at least not straight away. How are we going to innovate? How are we going to collaborate? How are we going to do stuff together when we all of a sudden can't sit together? And we might go back to cubicles. We might go back to separation or separate offices, because that's what we're facing in reality, at least in the first instance, when we can't get everybody in the office at the same time. We have to start thinking about that. And I think culture and the DNA that you talked about is so, so important about it. We could talk about this topic, you and I, until the cows come home, and probably longer. The aim that I like to have is for people to be able to take something away from this, that they can not just by listening to us start to think and form their own opinions on the topic, but also potentially have some resources and tools and advice that they can go, actually, I'll give it a try. So keeping in the realm of remote working, what advice would you give both to organizations who are new to remote or have been remote for a while and they recognize the importance of the culture. So where would you start? Any kind of advice, any resources that you can point them to?
Totally. And I think what you just mentioned in terms of the fact that things are not going to be the same ever again. And this opens up a huge opportunity for innovation, for challenging the status quo and embracing different approaches. So it's not going to be the standard interview cycle where you meet the person, you give them a walking tour around the office, you shake hands and so on. That's probably not going to happen anytime soon. I actually, here in Ireland, we will have a policy that is no handshake, which is kind of weird because this is natural inclination of a lot of human beings. But if I go back to the culture, the right setup, I firmly believe that transparency is the best policy, and being vulnerable. Recently, we all heard about what happened with Airbnb. They had to lay off 25% of their global workforce. And the letter that was sent from Brian Chesky, one of the co-founders, absolutely has shaken the whole world and LinkedIn in a very positive way, because they are showing vulnerability. They're open, they're transparent, they're talking about what's the struggle, what's the grind. So I honestly encourage companies to think about telling your story, telling the fact that it was challenging for you to move to this new setup. Twitter are now allowing all their employees, I think most of their employees, to actually work remotely indefinitely. So there are companies that are leading the way in the remote space. Learn from them. You don't have to reinvent the hot water. A lot of the stuff are published. They are not so well known when it comes to, you know, general knowledge, but I absolutely encourage you, and I'll send some links when it comes to what TaxJar and Buffer are doing. They have impressive career pages, really, really impressive, spot on. It really makes me, and I'm not even a candidate, it makes me trust them. And I've interacted with people from these organizations. They really do live and breathe with their values. Dealers Inspire, another remote company, they've converted their career page into kind of an FAQ sheet. So whenever you have any kind of questions, this is your go-to page. So it's preempting any potential concerns that you might have as a candidate. So they really show this level of transparency, empathy, and understanding. I've been following a really lovely girl, Steph Smith. She is a big name in the remote world. She's a self-taught coder. I don't know her whole history and professional experience. She's quite young as well. So she does have a fascinating blog with a lot of different ideas and tips that are super practical. Okay, no theory, practical ideas that you can implement basically from tomorrow. And the last piece of the puzzle, I told you I'm a psychologist, so I'm very biased when it comes to personality tests. But I have tested that with a client of mine, and all of their team was of developers. So traditionally, these are not the kind of people that open up easily to showcase their personality. We all did together a couple of personality tests, the Myers-Briggs one actually, and it was super fascinating to see how people opened up. They started a dialogue, they started talking about their preferred communication style. There you go, your culture in action. So based on that, you can derive some good tips around what actually culture fit is for you. So yeah, that was again another long-winded answer, but I hope these are some great resources that we're going to share with the audience.
Fantastic, fantastic nuggets of information there. So I can let you get on and talk about whatever you want, because I don't want to interrupt, because the stuff that you're talking about is amazing. So we'll include all the resources or as much as we can in the show notes for everybody to catch. One last thing, the question that I've always asked: where can people find you if they just want to say hi, grab a virtual coffee with you, or follow you for the content that you put out, so they want to learn from you? Where is best to kind of bump into you virtually?
Absolutely. And I am always on LinkedIn. Always. My name is way too unique. Whenever you start typing my first name, Radina, you'll see this blonde girl in a red sweater, red polo shirt. So you can definitely reach out to me. I'm more than happy if you provide me with context, because a lot of the times people just add you and there is no information how they know about you. So just give me some context. I'm more than happy to grab a virtual coffee or just have a chat about any topic that comes in mind. So LinkedIn is the best scenario, or either ways you can look for Vox Advisory on Google.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Radina, you're an amazing human being. Thank you very much for having on, coming on and sharing your knowledge. And I hope, and I'm pretty certain we'll catch you again soon for another episode to talk about all the other aspects of HR, onboarding on and culture and everything else that is included in that. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Really appreciate it, and all the very best.
One more thing before you take off. Next Step Group offers premium level support across a diverse range of remote work issues, 24 hours a day and in multiple languages, with experts in HR, legal, operations, tech, leadership, and more. It's open to leaders looking for guidance, consultants, and remote workers wanting to share their experience. You can join by visiting www.nextstep.group. This podcast is produced and hosted by Lech Guzowski from Human PM. Special thanks to the founders of the Next Step Group, Christina Barger, Jelaine Chan, Stefan Dorn, and Matteo Grassi.